I think it'd be fine if you just talk about whatever the thing is you're into. Like, I don't think I'd have an issue with that at all. Because if it's something that gets you pumped up and motivated, man, like, I'll listen to you talk about it. Hell, dude, I've been your friend long enough. I always listen to you talk about your latest and greatest hobby. I don't think I have ever once discouraged you from. I think the only thing I've ever done is be like, well, what happened to the last thing? I think that's all I've ever
Yeah.
said to you.
And I'm
Is,
like,
well,
oh,
what happened?
that boring ass shit?
Yeah.
Nah, this is the
Yeah.
new hotness.
I think that's literally all I've ever said to you is like, well, what happened to the last thing? But I never have once just said, oh, why are you doing this? You know, I've always said like, oh, yeah, that's what you want to do, dude. Go for it, you know?
Hello and welcome back to the Distinguished Humans Indie Game Dev Club. I am your host, Brad, and with me is Zach. Hello, Zach.
Hello, everybody.
All right, now, there is a very slim chance that Norbert may end up joining us. It's not looking good. We were trying to get the three of us together today, but he might swoop in at the end if we're still going. Depends on how long we go with the recording. Be honest with you, I am like sunburned to a degree I have not been in a very long time. Hungover from last night. Now, just to be transparent with everybody, and drove 4 hours round trip so that I can enjoy the halfway there party for the year long drinking event that I've been a part of at the Winking Lizard here in Northeast Ohio. I think I've mentioned on here before the He-Man Beer Drinkers Club, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so we're halfway through the year. If you had 50 of the 100 beers down or more, they invited you to a free party, and it was actually really fun. It has been a while since we've been on.
Yeah.
Actually, a shocking amount of time. I thought it wasn't as long as it's been.
Yeah, I think this was our longest gap besides the intentional break that we took at the end of the year.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'd even have to look at that because we're just over 2 months.
I feel like we might have to put in two breaks just because I know, especially like, I know you're busy in summer and I'm busy in summer. You know, I got my kids and sports and everything, and life just gets hectic in the summer for both of us.
You know what? Let me look at something here. So last year came in. Yeah, we did the same thing last year, except we made it strong into June last year. So we got into June. We had one show recorded in all of July. And then we had one show recorded in August.
Yeah. Or we could just say that as we approach summer, just don't expect a frequency or consistency.
Yeah.
Because, well, I mean, it's just natural, man. There's so much going on in summer.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, I think really the way things go with me, too. If I was active in doing, actually, I don't even know. Even like, it could be the recording day or the time. Because it always seems like we try to do these on Sundays. We try to record on Sunday evenings.
Yeah.
It always seems during the summer like that I might have time to do it, but I'm just beat from what was going on. Like today.
Yeah.
This is normally a day I would have been like, no, I'm not doing this tonight, Zach. You know? I am in an extraordinary amount of pain from my fifth degree sunburns, and I'm like still, I think I'm over the hangover, but like just having, I literally haven't even been home for 20 minutes from driving up from Columbus, so like I would have normally just been like, yeah, we'll do this another, and that's just, you know, that's usually how it happens. I'll do something like that and then we'll go, yeah, we'll hit it tomorrow or we'll hit it during the day, and then it never happens. We've planned on recording this show, this next number 26 here, probably three or four times in this 2 months that we've been away.
Yeah, and in that 2 months that we've been away, for a month and a half of it, I was sick.
Yes.
I went through, it all started with strep throat.
Yeah.
The first time I ever had strep in my life, and good Lord, I wish that upon no adult. My wife got it right after me, and she said this is far worse as an adult than it was as a kid. Because she had it when she was young as well as when she was a teenager, and she says that this is definitely worse than either of those times.
Yeah.
And I believe her, because it was pure misery. And then after that, it was a series of sniffles that I got from my kids, which weren't that big of a deal. But those turned into a sinus infection, which I get really nasty ones. And then that ended. And immediately after that, I had something. Don't know what. It wasn't COVID, because I got tested. And it was just a really nasty fever with my ice pick headaches. And that lasted about 4 or 5 days, but the ice pick headaches were basically there for like the last 2 or 3, and I had to miss work because of it. It was awful. I was in bed for basically 2.5 days, completely inoperable, just because of a headache, not even the fever, even though the fever sucked. But yeah. So that was my like 2 months, most of it, and then trying to dad stuff. Yeah,
right.
I'm on top of all of that, so it's been a weird 2 months for me.
Well, we just wanted to, you know, let you know where we've been. I know a lot of you probably thinking, are they ever coming back? I know some of the people I've talked to that listen to the show that I know in person were kind of, one made the comment today because they're part of the He-Man Beer Drinkers group. Joe, he's like, oh, I thought you guys just stopped recording. Like, I thought it was over. It is not over.
No.
We're here.
And if it ever is over, we will tell you. It will not we will not ghost you like that. That would be awful.
Yeah. But we may be changing a bit, and we may not. That's actually what we're going to talk about mostly today. Mm-hmm. Is we've been touching on this in our last few shows. So if you've like binged through these, like, you'll probably notice there's a bit of a trend of especially just me kind of waffling and trying to find my, I don't know, motivation for this show, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. It doesn't feel the same to me as it did when we started. And part of it's because of my wandering hobby affliction that I've talked about at length. We definitely, here in a minute, going to get into that. I asked for some listener feedback and got some really good feedback from several of our listeners on our Discord channel. So basically just asked, you know, what are the types of things that you like getting out of the show as a listener, right? Mm-hmm. So I want to kind of go over that and then also just talk amongst, you know, Zach and myself. And that's why we were hoping to get Norbert on here too, mm-hmm. as a, you know, contributor, sometimes co-host, but also Norbert's really good at kind of bouncing off ideas too. So I think that would have been valuable, but. So we either will or won't. And in fact, if Norbert jumps in, we're going to already be talking about like video games and TV shows and shit. So he's out of this conversation. Sorry, buddy. But yeah, you know, let's just kind of jump into that.
Yeah.
So I wanted to start with some of the stuff our listeners had written, and I'm just going to kind of go down the list. So the first one came from one of our top contributors, Chris from Virginia, which we do have a Chris's Corner today too, by the way. We'll be getting to that. And
we do.
And if you don't know, Chris has also made his own podcast called Game Developer Pete, very much in line with kind of what we're talking about here. So get over there and give Chris some support there too. But he wrote, for what it's worth, I think you should do whatever you want to and forget about what anyone else thinks. We're interested in your journeys, so you've got to walk your own paths wherever they lead. Not whatever paths you think we want you to follow, if that makes sense. And it does, Chris, and thanks for that. I think, and it isn't, I definitely want to take into account what our listeners enjoy about the show.
Sure.
But I think what he's saying and what I believe is it's the things that kind of motivate us makes the show good and worth listening to, right? So like,
yeah,
if we try to cater towards what people are telling us they want or what we think they want, we're going to end up missing the magic that this show has. Mm-hmm. Where we, you know, we, if there is any magic in this show, it's,
yeah,
it's that we are organic and we just get on here and, like you said, share our journey.
Yeah, we rarely follow a script. And if we do, right, it's for something brief, very brief. And mm-hmm. it'd be more of an introductory thing rather than it being a core part of the show itself. So,
right.
Yeah, and I like what he said because, you know, if you really look at it, the people who've joined the Discord, man, I mean, hell, they just all of you guys like came out of the blue. And, excuse me, and it was just this organic thing that happened. And I think that the magic of the show is that we are genuine. Whether that be to do the thing or at least just learn about the thing from various aspects, that's what has really, I think, helped our community grow. So I like how Chris really worded that.
Yeah, you know, as far as the journey that we, you know, that he says, that's what we're interested in is your journey. And I think that's really what I, eventually, once we get through the other comments we have here, that's what I want to talk about is what is our journey now? I think we never really had a clear picture of this at the beginning. if you
yeah.
remember.
Yeah. The beginning was just, we were in the ether, dude.
Yeah. It was like, hey, we want to make a show. Well, first of all, it was like, hey, we've been talking about making video games forever. We should probably maybe do that now, right?
Yeah.
And then throughout that process, it just kind of went, you know, it would be cool as if we did a podcast and just kind of talked about what we're doing with video games and so on and so forth. No idea how any of that worked. And, you know, what we were kind of hoping was that it would take shape as we kept doing it. Mm-hmm. And some of it has, yeah. You know, and I'm hoping for that refinement to continue. But the part of the journey that I'm struggling with now is like, I'm not super motivated to make video games right now. And that's what's bugging me. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, and that will come back. And, you know, I'll save that for the end. Okay. And we'll get to the next comment. But that's the frustrating part about this is the passion to want to make video games, it will definitely come back.
Like, yeah.
I don't know when, but it's a very cyclical thing for me, and it's annoying.
I know you well enough that it's going to come back, and my cat is attacking my headphone cord. Stop it.
Sweet.
Anyway, but I know you well enough that I know that will come back, like that drive to want to do it again and give it another go. Mm-hmm. So I know that at least. So for those of you out there who don't, you can take my word for it.
Yeah. When there's a couple, like some of the comments in here kind of speak to a few of the things I think as well. So I guess I'll just kind of go through these and then we can kind of talk about our feelings about it. So I'll get to the next one. This one is from Sean. He says, I get it, mate. Although it sounds like you have a bit of imposter syndrome, don't worry about it. Remember, you made the podcast for people starting out, including yourself. Here's my suggestion, kind of based on something you said on one of your podcasts. You managed to make it a community. How about having guests from people in the community? Of course, it would depend on if people agree, but even amongst this little group, there's a lot of different things going on. We could all chat about our own problems and starting journey. Most of us are still at the beginning and figuring shit out. So I think it's a great idea. And I like what he said that, you know, we've managed to create a community and we did, and it's not a massive community, but, it's really cool. I mean, I'd still say even in this 2 month hiatus here, we've still gotten a couple people that have found the show and joined the Discord. So our Discord's up to nearly 30 people at this point. Some more active than others. And the Discord is not our whole community. We have a lot of people that just want to listen to the show and will never want to reach out or anything. And that's, they're a bigger part of the community than those, or a bigger percentage, I guess, of the community than those that are on the Discord. So, you know, it's awesome that we have you guys and girls out there listening to our show. And we did it in that regard. Like, that was one of the main goals of starting. It was like, you know, we're going on this journey. Let's make a community of people on the same journey. And like, as far as that goes, we did that. That, yeah. You know, we have a community. It continues to grow, and it's a really great group of people. And yeah, getting them on here to talk every now and again, I think that would be fun for everybody. So what do you think of that?
Yeah, no, I like that too. And that's something, I think I've only been here for maybe just one time we had a guest other than Norbert on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually here live, and I had a blast with that, man. Like, that's always been fun. I like listening to the interviews when you've done them. And I know we'll probably, maybe we'll look at my comment. I don't know, because mine's pretty big. It's had to split it.
I'm gonna skip yours.
Okay, good. but no, I liked that part. That was something about the show that I really actually miss, that we haven't really, I think, dove into. And that was something you were really good at, by the way. You just have a way of making guests feel comfortable and, you know, feeling like they're just another guy we're shooting the shit with, even though we're talking about their project, their, you know, whatever game it is. And that's really, I think, all we've done is developed games. So, but yeah, that kind of stuff. And even just bringing on some of the people who are dipping their toes in for the first time, you know, letting them talk too, and seeing what their creative process is at, you know, and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's a huge part of Sean's comment that, like, stuck in my brain, was that, you know, having guests on, more guests would be cool. I know that's a lot of logistics, but it's worth it.
It is, and one of my thoughts on that that we tried for a bit there was the live chat room.
Yeah.
To kind of give the community an in to the show. And, you know, there's things about that I'd have to think about, like, what would that segment look like if we had it on? Would we maybe do, like, I've had podcasts that I've listened to where, you know, we might do, like, a trivia with them. And, you know, we don't have anything to give away, but we could probably come up with some kind of giveaway stuff or so, or just bragging rights for now, because we don't make any money with this show. there's no advertising or anything like that, but, you know, I think at this point there's things that we can look into that, but I think more importantly for now, it's great. And I love those suggestions. My bigger concern, however, is getting us back to a consistently quality show that you can, you can count on, hopefully at least every two. I mean, we were talking at the beginning of the year, and we kind of made a promise that we haven't kept even close, which was like, you're going to be getting a show every other week. And eventually we're going to be aiming for 2 weeks, or I'm sorry, every single week. Mm-hmm. And that we've gone the opposite direction. And I do apologize for setting that expectation and not following through. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, so that's part of this is like, yes, I love these suggestions that we get from you guys. And, but what I'm really looking for now is like the heart of the show. Like, I'm trying to figure out like what makes it work. Is it still game dev? Like, and again, these are things I want to dive into a little more after we get through everyone's comments. Maybe I should just move on to the next one. But that's more of what I want to try to figure out today. Like, is this still the show that we started with? Sure. And if it's not, do we continue? Or do we re-galvanize around the original image, or do we define a new image and pivot towards that? So that's kind of what I'm looking at. But let me get the next comment and we'll dive further into that.
Sure.
All right. So the next one's from JB. He says, while it's likely hard for you as a listener, hearing someone who is further along the path in game dev than me saying, I've not done anything dev related since the last episode, and then having a chat about what they've been doing instead, it's quite reassuring to me as someone starting out who is frequently kicking myself because I've not opened Unity for a week. I like the suggestion about having guests as well. And that's what I love, right? Like, I've gotten so much feedback when I come on and say, like, again, part of this was an accountability thing. Like, for me to get on here and tell all of you, like, I haven't done shit game dev in, like, I don't know, 6 months now. It's supposed to be, like, shaming me a bit, you know? And it does. Right. It certainly does. I like that me, it doesn't just have a benefit for me to make me go, damn, I have to go face everyone again on the mic and tell them that I haven't done anything like that. That's helpful for me, but it's great to hear that that also helps the community too, to go, hey, we're all just humans. And
yeah,
you know, so that's nice.
That is nice. And, you know, I know I was really powering through things there for a while, and that was more of momentum carrying me for there for a really long time, because for me it was the game jam game, really. That was what got me rolling. And though this year it was pretty much ever since I got my job, my focus pivoted so hard, plus I'm still technically in school, that I realize now my plate is too full. I have to trim. And it's become more of a, okay, I'm going to maintain the project that I had started this year, but I'm going to, you know, we could talk about that towards the end, like what I'm doing, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but thanks, JB, for that comment. Let's go to Blinks real quick. Mm-hmm. So I stumbled on this, and Blinks, I've seen a couple comments on here, but I think this is one of the first ones I've really... they chat on there quite often, I guess. Mm-hmm. I stumbled on this last year while looking for game dev resources. While it's still my focus, I also really enjoy the other stuff that comes up on the show and in the Discord. Funny enough, since your episode about Moonbreaker and Brandon Sanderson, I have since read 8 of his books on your recommendation. That's fucking awesome.
That's cool.
That's so great. Like, I'm so happy to invite you into the Brandon Sanderson Cosmere. Like, that dude, like, everyone else that's not Blink that's listening to this, like, he just read 8 books. You know why he did that? Because this dude is an out of this world author. Go read his books.
I'm gonna have to check him out, because I still haven't gotten to him yet. I want to, but
He's what I love about him, besides, you know, he's actually not like the most prolifically genius author. He's really good, and he's great at world building, and he's great at magic systems. I'm sorry, this is a segue, but you start talking about Brandon Sanderson, I'm going to get going. What is cool about him is he is a world class author. Like, he's good. He's not, I would say technically there are better authors out there. Mm-hmm. He's really good and he's really enjoyable to read. But what makes him my favorite is he just pumps books out, and they're good.
You know who's another author like that I like?
Who's that?
R.A. Salvatore.
Yeah.
I will say his early books with Driss Doerden, which, if you know that character from D&D, you know who I'm talking about. He is the creator of this character. And, his early books with that character are kind of meh. So if you try to read them in chronological order of the timeline, not the order that the books came out, you're going to get kind of jarred when you get to the fourth book, because the first trilogy is the prequel books, which he wrote later. Mm. And they are so awesome. I love those books because it's basically Dritz, his exit from the Underdark and then into the world. Oh, but cool. The first book he ever wrote with Drizzt is like this stereotypical D&D style book still. It's very generic. He tosses in things about getting loot and stuff.
Yeah.
And so you'll get jarred if you try to read these books in order of chronological timeline. But if you do read the prequel books, I think that's a great introduction to the character. R.A. Salvatore is another really good author. Just pumps books out like a madman. And his books are good. They're just good.
They're fun. And that's that's what Brandon Sanderson's like too.
Yeah.
And then alternatively, and I will call this asshole out by name, Patrick Rothfuss, who wrote two amazing books. I mean, just the first one's called The Name of the Wind. I can't think of the second right now, but it's supposed to be a trilogy, and it's set up to be such an awesome ending. But this dude's been sleeping on it for like over a decade at this point, and he got some fame. I have my opinions on why, but there's like a call now for like every, like I saw a petition online, like, can we just have Brandon Sanderson finish his trilogy? Because like, he can do it like a but we can get into that. Anyway, sorry, Blink, you got me going, but I'll continue. So he goes, I suppose for me, I still like the focus to be related to game dev. I'm interested in hearing opinions on the current state of gaming, game reviews, recommendations, etc. Challenges to making progress in game dev are interesting and helpful to hear about too. It's also valuable to have a Discord of people to bounce ideas and resources off of. You are really genuine good dudes to engage with, though I haven't been very active lately with you all. That said, I think you should produce content that you are interested in and passionate about first. Listener considerations are important too, but talk about what gets you excited. So that last two sentences, I really think is what we were saying earlier and what I believe is the best method.
Yes. And I love, so here's the part that gets me pumped. This will always get me pumped, and I will never not be pumped, is when he says, I'm interested in hearing opinions on the current state of gaming, game reviews, recommendations, etc. All of that. I love, because I love gaming, not just as a consumer, but I like looking at what's happening to devs, man. What's happening to the business side of it? Like, why are things happening? I love that stuff.
We sat here for nights drinking and, you know, with nothing being recorded, and we would sit here till like 2 a.m. talking about this shit sometimes.
Yeah. I love that stuff. So like, and you know, I'm not kidding. I could probably talk. Well, I mean, you just said it. I could talk about that forever.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that we would have to cut ourselves off on. And be like, listen, we're going to have to continue this conversation next episode.
Yeah. Go ahead.
But that, you know, that right there, I love that stuff, man. Like, and the other thing, like recommendations, like I have a pretty niche, a lot of niche games I'm into, and I really just don't have anyone to talk about with them, you know, about them. So it's like, this is a perfect opportunity for me to throw those out there and say, hey, here's a game I really enjoyed in the past, or I've played it recently. It's a really niche style game. And that way I can at least kind of prime you for it. You know, if that's not your niche, then you can ignore it. But if it is, or maybe you're curious, maybe it's a game you find you like, and then all of a sudden you found this new niche genre that's like really fun for you.
Yeah.
So yeah, I really, that was a huge recommendation that I liked from him.
Yeah. And just to kind of wrap that up, like I'll read that last sentence again. Listen, considerations are important, or last two. So I think you should produce content that you are interested in and passionate about first. Listener considerations are important too, but talk about what gets you excited. So that's really kind of where he talks about what you're passionate and interested in and that gets you excited. Again, I think that's what we're trying to make sure that the show is still centered around.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure for myself, at least currently, that game development is what's exciting me as much right now. But there are aspects that maybe we could be talking about. And the show itself excites me. Like, I like doing the show. I like, you know, I like the community, and I feel like we, even though we're not super focused on game dev stuff, or haven't been in the last few shows, it's still fun to get on here. It feels a little dishonest to me, I guess, when we get away from game dev stuff.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, like that was the promise we made with the title of the show, and like, you know, and you get on here and you're like, a lot of people have mentioned, like, I'm just starting out in the game dev world. I want something that I want to immerse myself in to, you know, keep my engagement up. So I'm going to look for podcasts and people talking about the same stuff. But then they download our podcast. They hear that we're talking about it for a little while. But then the show changes into something else. And that's kind of what I want to identify is, do we want to lean into that change, or do we want to keep good on the original promise we made? So
yeah,
we have one more comment, which I really, there's some good stuff that was brought up in here too, in the game dev kind of aspect of things. So this is from Free World 404. One thing I really enjoy about game development is that it combines so many different fields, from coding, art, storytelling, to the business side and marketing. So I feel like there's lessons to be learned from coding, game design discussions, dabbling in short stories, or marketing for a woodworking business. Shout out to Norb. And if it's not directly applicable, it can still definitely be an inspiration in many ways. Always remember, or it always reminds me of Pikmin, which came because, I'm going to try this.
You want me to get it?
Yeah.
Shigeru Miyamoto.
There we go.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Picked up gardening as a hobby. I'd love to hear about other things that excite you, learning about games that I didn't have on my radar so far and what worked for them, or interviews with different guests. Thanks for your hard work. Looking forward to the next episode. And looks like, oh, I thought Free World was maybe jumping on the Sanderson train, but he was just commenting on the 8 books that Blink took down. Yeah, like that is, again, I think I've mentioned on the show before, and if I haven't, it's always worth bringing up. Like, that's why I chose game development. Like, mm-hmm. when I sat down and went, all right, I'm getting old. I can't do all of these things that I start and don't finish. So I need to pick one and then actually finish it. I settled on game development because it does span so many different things.
Sure.
And you can decide to get down into the details on some of these, you know, like if you're really great at coding and storytelling, you can skill up in those areas, and you don't ever have to be good at art. You can outsource that part of it. You can outsource the business side if you don't want to deal with that part. You know, you kind of pick the things you like about it, do that stuff yourself, put those hats on. And then find other people going forward if you want to, you know, if you actually want to get this thing released. Mm-hmm. So that's always been why I love game development. The challenge, though, is now that the interests shift, like they always do with me, I find myself wanting to sit here with my iPad and sit on my porch and write this story that I'm working on. There was a week or two ago, I just had this shot of inspiration where I just felt obligated that I wanted to draw. Mm-hmm. And like for 2 days, I sat and drew and joined a forum and was talking to a bunch of people. And I even said I should find the comment. In fact, while you're kind of giving your comment, I'll look it up because it's actually really funny. I told them straight up, like, don't expect me to hang around here very long because I'm, the next hobby will be sweeping me away soon enough. but I'll let you give your comment on that.
All right. Yeah. So he really just, another thing he brings up in a different way is kind of how Blink brought up, you know, things related to game dev, the state of gaming, game reviews, recommendations. He brings that out, and he also talks in more detail of sort of the business side of things and mm-hmm. how games are made. What does it take to make a game? And he brings up all these fields: code, art, storytelling, marketing, and then whatever other administrative stuff you have to deal with on the business end. You know, there's all these little things that we can talk about, and there's almost always news happening. You know, we can thank the AAA sphere for that because they are screwing somebody over every other week. So we can almost always find something right. negative to talk about, but at the same time, we can always find gems to talk about as well. And the latest being, which releases in 5 days, is Baldur's Gate 3. I mean, yeah. Just looking at something like that, man, with Larian Studios, like, They did Divinity Original Sin 1 and 2, which both are phenomenal games. Mm-hmm. If you're into tabletop RPGs like Dungeons and Dragons, this company makes games that are probably the best possible fit for you. They do their best to allow you that sandbox feel that you get at a tabletop, but in a digital world with, you know, cool graphics and whatnot. But those kinds of things, like, yeah, I feel like that all falls on what Free World and Blink are really talking about here. And those are things that I know you and I, we could talk until these people are going to tell us, okay, Zach, Brad, we get it. And then you and I will be like, no, you don't understand. Wait. So I just know that these kinds of discussions, I'm glad that they're saying stuff like that, because it feels good to know that we can talk about these things that we can easily discuss. And, you know, you and I have had a lot of conversations, even if we go back to when I lived in South Carolina and I was single, and, you know, we would just talk on Skype back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is before Discord for all you whippersnappers out there. Yeah, man. I remember us just talking about everything from the games to the industry.
Do you remember Project Bumblebee?
Yes. Yes. I still have the notes from that.
I do, too. I just found them the other day.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly what we were. I think we were looking at a tabletop game for that.
I think so. Yeah. It was either these are going to be two polar opposites, but it was either a tabletop game or we wanted to do something. You know what it was? It was a tabletop game that was going to be like a MOBA.
Yeah.
That was what it was, because we were huge into like League back then. Like League was one of the predominant games in our life.
Yeah. Well, then there was a lot of references to, like the Warhammer fantasy, like stats for units and stuff.
Yep.
Because I remember there was a conversation I could see myself having with myself in the comments. It's like, should we try to reinvent the wheel on the stats? And I'm like, no, that's stupid. Is that what we want to spend time doing? Like, if it's not broke, don't fix it kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But yeah, those are the kinds of things I can talk, you know, I could talk about forever. I know you can talk about forever, you know. And yeah. I like talking about design. He brings up game design discussions.
Mm-hmm.
Design is something I've always had a passion for. It's why I went to school for it the first time I went to college. But yeah, so.
Yeah, and I'll tell you the thing that bugs me, because everything you said, like, and everything that Free World 404 listed here at points are things that I'm super interested in, but it's never sustainably the same thing. Like, you're never going to catch me being crazy motivated towards coding for an extended amount of time. Like, if you met me and we had this exhilarating conversation about coding, like, you will see this burning passion in me for it if it's the it thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you might see me a year later and expect to have that same conversation, and I'll be like, oh, dude, like, I haven't thought about that since probably last time we talked a year ago.
Yeah.
And I hate that about myself. And actually, let me segue, and that was our last of the user comments. And thank you all for writing those. And we're going to segue into kind of like how we feel, but I think it's a great kind of segue is reading this thing I found. So this was 2 weeks ago. I had gotten the itch to start drawing again, right? Like I said earlier. And I started, you know, like, what happens when those itches come? It's like, okay, where do I start? Do I just start drawing stuff? Do I look at something? You know, I go buy a bunch of books, and, you know, so eventually I usually always end up on Udemy. You know, it's a good starting point. And I did that and found these courses. I wasn't logged into my account, but I found these courses by a guy named Scott Harris called Character Art School.
Okay.
And it seemed like a really cool course. I think I saw it at work and I'm like, I'll check this out after work. And then when I got in, or when I logged in my account to actually buy it, I realized that I had bought it, you know, a year and a half ago. The last time drawing was my was my thing, which is really funny. But so let me read what I wrote to the introduce yourself section of this art school forum. So I said, hello, everyone. So my hobby this week is going to be drawing, it seems. My normal rhythm is to get super excited about a hobby, let it dominate my thoughts and actions for 7 to 14 days, and then get bored with it and succumb to the siren song of the next hobby. Part of my obsession with the latest hobby, as I said, drawing this week, is that I go all in on fantasizing about all the wonderful things that I will create in the community I will join. I'll start a podcast, purchase a website devoted to it, buy a bunch of books and materials to support it, all within the two-week burn time of the latest and greatest hobby. In fact, how I found myself here was as a result of the last time drawing was my focus, a little over a year ago. Inspiration struck. I started looking for a course to get going on drawing and found Scott Harris's character art school course and thought, wow, this will be perfect. Then I realized I had purchased it already in 2022. This might seem self-deprecating, but that's not really the intention. It's just that in my 42 years on this earth, I finally started to realize this pattern in myself, and I'm kind of tired of never sticking with anything. So as they say, the first step to solving a problem is to admit that you have one. I'm looking forward to meeting some of you and seeing the great work you've done. Hopefully I get to share some with you as well before I'm whisked away to the next exciting hobby.
All right.
So that, like, that's my life. And I don't want it to pull me away from this podcast. So. Yeah.
Well, I think it'd be fine if you just talk about whatever the thing is you're into. Like, I don't think I'd have an issue with that at all. Because if it's something that gets you pumped up and motivated, man, like, I'll listen to you talk about it. Hell, dude, I've been your friend long enough. I always listen to you talk about your latest and greatest hobby. I don't think I've ever, I don't think I have ever once discouraged you from. I think the only thing I've ever done is be like, well, what happened to the last thing? I think that's all I've ever said to you.
And I'm like, well, oh, what happened? That boring ass shit? Nah, this is the new hotness.
I think that's literally all I've ever said to you is like, well, what happened to the last thing? But I never have once just said, oh, why are you doing this? You know, I've always said like, oh, yeah, that's what you want to do, dude. Go for it. You know, dude, I'll listen to you talk to me about art, you know. I've struggled with that in my past. Now, granted, I have it much more under control these days, but I've been there. So, like, I know what that is like, letting the ADHD take over and you're just pumped about, you know, this thing or that thing, and then you get super hyper-focused on the thing. Hell, even now, dude, Warhammer 40K 10th edition came out, and it looks amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, like, my brain is like, let's go play it. It's like, and I'm like, no. And dude, that's a hard urge for me to fight because I love painting those models. And but what I've done, and it's something I've talked with my wife about, is that, you know, what I'll do is when I graduate and I don't have to worry about school looming over my head anymore, more than happy to paint these models. I may not play the game, but I'll paint the models and I'll have some fun just having that little hobby there. But yeah, just hearing about what you're into, dude. I mean, that could easily fit into the realm of this podcast. We've talked about it before, you know, whatever you're into, we hope that this inspires you to chase that. And who knows, maybe you have your latest fling, your latest shiny hobby. Maybe a listener hears that, they get into it, and all of a sudden they're producing work for that, and that maybe they even turn it into a career. Who knows? All because you had this little 2 week to 1 month long fling with this thing, you know?
Right.
And you know, there's nothing wrong with being a well-rounded hobbyist either, you know? And
yeah,
that's kind of how I feel towards that.
I guess it's just trying to figure out like how to not beat myself so much or beat myself up so much about it.
Sure.
And figure out where to find the strengths in just how I am. Because I don't think at this point I'm going to change anything.
Sure.
There might be a situation where one of these I finally get, you know, because right now it's definitely writing still.
Yeah.
Like I've been into writing since I think we talked about that our last one or maybe even last two shows was how writing seemed really interesting to me at the moment.
Yeah.
And that hasn't changed. I mean, the story, I'll talk about some of the writing stuff here in a bit, but how I've been writing has changed, but the writing itself has still been a kind of a passion.
Yeah.
Except for that, by the way, it didn't end up even being a week or two or 7 to 14 days. Like I said, it was like literally 2 days. Okay. I drew for one day, and then I messed around a little bit the following day, and then I don't think I have opened up Procreate since then. So,
okay.
So that, right. Was that. Nice, just a little vacation. But what is cool, and like Free World 404 said, all of that stuff, if any of it, if I end up following any of it down the road enough to where I can actually start doing some useful things with it, there, all of it can be used in game development.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Chris Metzen is one of the most prolific story writers that I know of in the game design world. All of the, mm-hmm. or most of the lore that you know of World of Warcraft, at least in the, you know, except for maybe the last couple expansions, has been Chris Metzen.
Yeah.
In his storytelling, along with a lot of other Blizzard's IPs came from Chris. So, like, there's definitely a market for that. Riot needs people to flesh out their world. Like, people want to play these games.
Yeah, that, Riot's been going. They're going in. They've been doing such a good job. Their lore now is awesome.
It used to just be like a little, like, it was interesting kind of watching that mature over the years, actually. Yes,
it was. And when they did, like, the revamp, the complete, like, hey, we're starting fresh, so everything mm-hmm. you know about your characters may change, you know?
Right.
But, yeah, that was really awesome to watch that happen.
But, yeah, like, that, and that gives me hope here. And I love the support of the community that I've had. People, some of my friends that have listened to this actually called me after the last show and talked to me about what we were talking about. And they thought it was great that I got on and was just honest about how I felt. And they thought that was really kind of a special show. And I didn't really feel it was any different, but it was really cool to hear some feedback that they felt it was a special show for them and spoke to them in a certain way. So that was great. But it's also just the support. It's like, dude, yeah, man, if you feel like writing stories, like, go write your stories. And then eventually, if that's what the passion keeps going in that direction,
yeah,
then, you know, just tie all that shit back into game development. And as long as, like, you're there, I think it works. If you're still there doing, you know, like, you're way better at, you know, sticking on a path than I am.
Yeah.
So it
hasn't always been that way, but
right.
Yeah.
Lately for sure.
Yes.
So if you're the stalwart, like, rock that, you know, the people that are tuning in to hear the game dev stuff, if at least they know that Zach's going to be talking about some actual game dev shit. And I don't dominate the show with, like, whatever bullshit it is I'm into. Then I think it works. And we can keep the original plan. And like I said, it will 100% turn back around to game development. I don't know when, but it will for sure. I will, and that burning passion that I had when we started recording will be back for a certain amount of time. And then we'll rotate to something else. You know, but who knows? The next time it comes around, I might actually finish a game. If that does happen, sometimes I see some of these through to actually some cool results. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
I wrote down a little note here for you because at some point you mentioned, like, you know, you're just wondering, like, how do I keep this, like, going, these interests or whatever. And I was just thinking, like, do bite-sized, and I put this in quotes, bite-sized masterpieces. You know, just take your, you know, whatever hobby you dive into, give yourself, like, a very short-term goal with it, so that way at least, like, if you're getting into it and then you realize, like, oh, this is shit, I do not want to touch this with a 10-foot pole, you can back out before that goal is ever accomplished. But, like, maybe you get into it and you're like, yeah, this is great, and then you have that goal, you go, you know what targets this little bite-sized goal I've made for myself. And, you know, I'm sure you'll come up with something that's like, well, that was just too fucking easy. Or other times you'll be like, shit, this is way too much of a, this is not a bite-sized goal. This is a full-on project. You know, just little things like that, and then you can adjust and pivot. But I don't know, maybe that would help with like the flings too, because then at least you do finish something each time you go into the new, latest and greatest thing.
Right.
You know, and that it could be a small thing, whatever. But who cares? You finished something. You know, you did this little hobby, you finished it, and that's cool. You know?
Yeah. Damn, I hope I finish this story that I just started writing. It's...
Yeah.
It's... I Wait, you know what?
Something with that. So, at school, I may have talked about this dude. He's a young kid. He's 19 years old. He's going for his master's degree. Like he'll have his master's next year at 20 something years old. And, you know, real smart dude. I hang out with him a lot. I still talk with him frequently, and he writes stories on the side. Now,
okay,
he doesn't do this all the time. This is something he dabbles in. And he's told me, the last time I talked to him about it, he's like, I haven't touched my story in probably 3 or 4 months, to be totally honest. He's like, I kind of want to revisit it though. And he shared his story with me and I read it and I said, wow, this is actually really cool. I like this a lot. It was only like 6 pages, like total. Okay. And this is something he had been working on for a long time, like a year, almost 2 years. But the way he does it is he just, when he has that mood where he's like, I want to write, he looks at his story, gives it a quick read over of the most recent stuff. He kind of, you know, and then it just starts jogging his memory. All these thoughts and notes come back. He also takes notes. And so he's able to follow those and he'll write something. And he's like, sometimes I'll write a paragraph. Sometimes I'll write 2 pages. He's like, I don't know. He's like, I don't know what's going to come out, but whatever I feel like doing, that's what I do.
Yeah.
That may not be a bad approach either for you. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying it'll work or not work, but you know.
You know, yeah, that is something that I'm kind of doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I've been doing is I have several documents and notes. Like I'm writing it in Google Docs so that I can pick up any device anywhere. And that's been super helpful.
Yeah.
Like I can be on my work computer and something hits me and I want to actually go and start, you know, laying something down. So there's the actual story itself that I'm rough drafting right now. Mm-hmm. And then there's probably 3 or 4 other documents that I have either on Apple Notes, which are like my quick things. I'm at the grocery store and I think of something.
Yeah.
I pull that out and I'll just make a note of it. And then I have two other big notes that are dealing with different aspects of the story that I'm still fleshing out.
Okay.
And I was going to wait till after Chris's Corner to dive into this, because we do have a new Chris's Corner for you guys. But since we're on it and I'm thinking about it, I'll go ahead and talk about it now. So story writing, it hasn't been like my whole focus over the last few weeks, but definitely hobby wise, probably for the last couple months, reading and writing have been the most dominant hobby for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It works out well in the summer, I think, because you can do it anywhere. Like we don't watch a lot of TV anymore in the evenings. Going to bed, we actually took the TV out of our room at our Columbus house, so we just read books. And I'll get up early before everybody else, and a lot of times I would play games or do something else. Like it's mostly been reading books in the morning, so I've been getting a lot of reading done. Still doing a lot of Stephen King. Although I did just remind me about Dungeon Crawler Carl.
Okay.
We can actually, let's talk about that at the end of the show when we talk about things we're listening to and movies and shows and games and stuff.
Okay.
But don't let me forget about Dungeon Crawler Carl, because it's excellent. But anyway, so the process that I started with, and this is again something that Brandon Sanderson brought up, and I think that I might have posted this in the last. Let me look real quick. Or Zach, if you could, while I'm going through this, in our last show notes, or one of the last couple episodes, see if I posted Brandon Sanderson's course that he does.
Okay.
I'll explain it again real quick, but essentially he's a professor at a college here in America, and he teaches a writing class, and they've recorded that, and it's available for free on YouTube, and you can watch the entire thing. And one of the interesting things that he talks about is like the style of your style of writing, which is going to be wildly different from one individual to another. And I think I'm still trying to discover what mine is.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about one, or the two main ones, and he might have only actually introduced these two. One is called the discovery writer, and the other one's the outliner. And you might have different terms for it. But so essentially, a discovery writer is somebody who might have like a rough idea of where their story is going, but they just kind of just start writing and see where it takes them as they're writing. Yeah. So they're kind of making it up as they go along, and might have like checkpoints that they're trying to hit, or things that they thought they know how it's going to end. And they might know a couple of the things that happen as it goes, but everything else is they're going to find out as they write.
Yeah.
And then the outliner is exactly the opposite, kind of. They do flesh out almost the entire story with a fair amount of details in an outline, and kind of tweak that outline for a while before they start writing the book or the story or whatever.
Yeah.
And I originally had thought that I was more of an outline writer, because I like structure. I was thinking the way that I'm a coder, and just that kind of thinking that I do. You know, definitely the hands-on guy that, you know, right-brained as far as can fix anything that's broken around the house, and my family has anything that's not working, they bring it to me, I can usually fix it. So like, I thought for sure, like, oh yeah, that, you know, concrete analytical style is going to be more my thing.
Yeah.
And the first short story that I started writing, when this new writing hobby came in, was I did a full outline of it, and it's in pretty good detail. And then I started writing it, and then probably like a day or two into it, like, I just didn't make the, I didn't make time to do it one day. And then it just kind of pushed. I wasn't excited to write it anymore.
Yeah.
And eventually I just haven't looked back at it in, you know, probably a month now. And yeah. I think, and Brandon Sanderson actually made a comment about that. He goes, a lot of people that do the outlining find out that that is not the way to, they feel like they've already written the story, so the excitement's already gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that doesn't work for everybody, because, and I think that's what happened. Like, as I'm writing, I'm not excited about it, because I'm like, I already finished the story. I already know how all this is going to go.
Yeah.
So this book that I want to do now, which is, I think, a way better idea. I don't want to give too much of it away, because it's like, it's a fairly unique idea.
Okay.
But, oh man, am I excited about it. But I don't have all the answers. I am just writing it. And I'm like, I started it last week on my drive down. So last Wednesday, I got enough of it together to go, okay, I know where the starting point's going to be. I will tell you this. I'll tell you where the idea came from. Last Monday night, I woke up in the middle of the night from a really cool-ass dream I had.
Okay.
I couldn't go back to sleep, and I just jotted the notes down for the dream. And essentially the dream was like the beginning of a story. And that was all I was given. So this is what it was basically. Mm-hmm. It was like the 25th anniversary of this really advanced, fully immersive game, like the Oasis or whatever from Ready Player One.
Yeah.
And these two players are, they're going on some quest to find, and I was one of the two players.
Mm-hmm.
So there's probably maybe like me and you. I don't think it was you, but it might have been. And we're, you know, we're doing this super important global quest to find something. And this world's super big as well. So like, there's plenty of areas that you could go that no players have ever actually been. And I think that was what part of the 25th anniversary was about, actually, was going and exploring uncharted areas, right? So they go to this place, they're doing their quest and looking for the things, and then they go to the local shop to like rest and get their equipment repaired and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And there's a really kind of unique armor or blacksmith there. Like the shop, as soon as they go to it, we started realizing like, oh man, this is a whole lot different than any of the other NPCs we've seen. Like there's like a bar in the middle of the blacksmith shop, and the mm-hmm. blacksmith kind of sits there and bullshits with you and serves you food and drinks while he's fixing your stuff. So that was way different. Never seen anything like that. Then, whoever was with me notices that one of the things that was up on display looked a whole lot like the Dog Pound logo and Chief Wahoo's sitting right next to it.
Okay.
Like he points over and he's like, dude, what is that? Is that the Dog Pound? Like, I'm like, it certainly looks like it. And at the beginning of this, you know, like there was just kind of a knowledge that 20 years ago, there was a rumor that someone had gotten stuck inside of the game. And it kind of faded into folklore, and no one really believed that it was actually a thing. But long story short is the blacksmith is the player that got stuck in the game.
Gotcha.
And he starts telling the story. So that was how I woke up. Like, that was the dream. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. So the book is going to basically be the blacksmith retelling his tale of, you know, what happened. He's the most powerful being in this game. Mm-hmm. Like he's an absolute badass. So there's just some really exciting things, and I have more of it fleshed out now. But as it is, I've written 26,000 words of this. Of this book already.
Wow.
Like in less than a week. And I may, I was thinking along those lines, like I may get pulled off this at one point and onto another hobby. And like you were saying, it might work that way where I'm on this for a couple weeks. I get, you know, three quarters or a quarter of it written. And then I walk away, but all those notes are still there. So when I come back to it, I can just pick it up and keep going with it. So,
yeah, I think that's an important way to work. And I've noticed that is a huge shift for me in what has allowed me to stay on track with things personally. Because the one thing that has improved over the past few years of my life is my ability to take notes, like meaningful notes. Where if I come back to something and I haven't seen it in a while, I can look at my notes and go, oh, okay, got it. And yeah. Just dive back in without having to actually look at the thing. Where this becomes most relevant is in code.
Yep.
And that's pretty obvious as to why that would be very important to take like plain English notes. as someone who works in some really, really weird code on a daily basis, me taking notes on how I've solved problems in that code has been a lifesaver because there's been things that I've changed when I first started that are in production that have come back and say, hey, we came across this bug. Can you fix it? I said, yeah, sure. And then diving back to something I haven't looked at in, you know, basically in 2 months.
Right.
I'm like, well, shit, let me check my task notes.
Yeah.
And I'll open that up and it's like, ah, okay, that makes sense. And I can immediately dive back in and find where I need to go in this crazy, crazy amount of code. But I've taken that same like style of note taking and applied it now elsewhere. And anytime I've done that, it has been a huge, huge help in that, whatever it is. It could be anything from my personal life to something in the creative arts, whatever. But yeah. I like that you also brought up that you thought your way of your creative process would be to outline things, you know, because I thought that way too for a long time. But the truth be told, I only like doing structured stuff at my job. Any other area of my life, I hate having an outline, so to speak. I would rather do the process of discovery. And so that I like that you brought that up, because even today, something simple that I've never done before, but it is simple, is replace, I don't even know what this shit's called. It's like the liner in the frame of your door to an outside door. It basically creates the seal of your door from the outside to the inside.
Yeah.
I forget what that shit's called. Yeah, something like that. But it's basically on the sides of your door and the top, not on the bottom, yeah, but on the sides and top. Yeah, and it's like a rubbery material.
Yeah, I just replaced
that.
Strip.
Yep. Yeah, I just replaced that today. I've never done that before, ever. And I was like, well, shit, fuck it. We're going to figure it out. And I had a little bit of a breadcrumb because my wife and I are thinking about getting this particular door replaced. So we had Lowe's come out and look at it. And the guy who came out was the same one who did the quote for my fence. And so I already had a rapport with this guy. He straight told me, he's like, I don't want you to really come to us for a brand new door. He's like, you have a perfectly fine door. Yeah, it's a little scratched up from your dogs hitting it, but he's like, it's a perfectly sturdy and good door. He's like, boy, here's what I would do if it was my house. And he just kind of went over it. I was like, oh, okay. And so I had a little bit of a breadcrumb on how, on what to get. I just didn't know necessarily how it worked. So I did all the fixes, and I replaced the weather strip on my door. And I was pretty proud of that because I'd never done something that
right
in that sphere. But like, that's how I like to learn. Whereas old me would have been like, okay, what do I got to do? Google, YouTube. All right, have a plan. Here's my material list. Let's go. And like, then by the time I get to the store, I start to get anxiety. Because even if it's something simple like that, I get anxiety. Because now it's like, oh no, did I forget something? What if I don't know what I'm doing? And there's been, I hate to admit this, but there's been a couple times in my life where I get ready to do a project in the house, I have this plan, and then I get to the store and I get anxiety so bad that I walk out.
Yeah.
And so, but if I just wing it, dude, and I have a, even if it's just a breadcrumb that leads me in the right direction, but I wing it, I just go grab the shit, come home, do the thing. Even if I fuck it up, I still learn something in that process and I go, oh, I see what I did wrong. And then I feel more confident to go back to the store and get the thing I need to get to fix it, the now mistake that I've made,
right,
and go do that and come back. I'm much more comfortable with that than I am having this huge plan ready to go, rocketing out.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know, dude. I've learned that besides work, my process when I'm doing my stuff is very much discovery oriented. Even in house projects, as
yeah,
weird as that sounds.
You know, it's funny, as you've kind of painted that picture, it reminded me of one of the hobbies I've taken on that has been the most successful and like longest lasting one that I've had, which is this podcast.
Yeah.
And this one was done very much discovery. That's been the whole like charm of it, is like, we don't know what we're doing. Let's roll and we'll figure it out as we go. And that should have been a hint towards my my style. But, you know, like I think I have very much embraced that kind of mentality as I've gotten older. Before, I was such a stickler on making sure I was prepared before jumping into anything.
Yeah.
I think I've just realized over the course of my life, it's like, I mean, there's a level of preparation that you should do to at least like know what you're getting into to some degree, but like, you don't have to have everything. You know, the important thing is that you start whatever it is you want to do.
Yeah.
And then, you know, things have a way of just kind of revealing themselves as you go.
Yeah. Speaking of house projects being kind of like that, the first time I replaced a ceiling fan with a light.
Yeah.
Took me 9 hours.
Oh, yeah, dude. Steely fans are a pain in the ass.
Yeah, the first time I did it, it took me 9 hours. And that's because I spent about 2 of those hours having to drive back to the store to pick something up that I needed that I didn't have and come back home. And then do that process multiple times. And so that was 2 of those 9 hours. But what was cool is the second time I did it, it only took me 4. And I'm ready to do a third, and I'm hoping that'll only take me 2 or 3. So, like, I didn't plan anything. I just said one day I saw this box that had been sitting in our room with the new ceiling fan with the new light. And I just said, yeah, well, fuck it. Today we're doing it. And I just opened it up and went for it. And it was like, all right. And my wife came in during the mother F's up and down when I'm having a frustrating moment. And she just like, do you need anything? And I was like, no, go away. But yeah, I mean, dude, that discovery process was how I got that thing done. So I'm glad that you talked about that because I've never really given it much thought. But as you were talking, all these things flooded my brain of like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm the same way.
Yeah. So I did put a link to Brandon Sanderson's website where he answers the question if he's an outliner or discovery writer. So I thought that was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Episode 24, by the way, is the episode where you posted his class.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw that. So if you want that link in Discord, just go back to episode 24. It's the first link that we posted there. It's really cool. If you're interested at all at writing, or if you just want something interesting to listen to while you're driving somewhere, like the dude's just kind of fascinating. Mm-hmm. And if you're at all into those books, like, is it Blink that got into him?
Yeah.
Is that who it was? Yeah. So Blink, there's some just fun stuff to learn more about this dude because he's just such a cool ass guy. All right. Well, let's get into Chris's Corner. We've had this in my inbox now for nearly 2 months. In fact, hold on. When was it? He sent this to me on June 17th. So month and a half. So thanks for getting that out to us, Chris. We're going to listen to it here. I will tell you that Zach and I have not. Oh, no. We're going to listen to it, and then we will have comments afterwards. So without further ado, Chris's Corner.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another installment of Chris's Corner. Today, we are going to dig in on the idea of change, I guess, of development, of skill development. One of the things I'm trying to do in my life is develop the necessary skills to get a job within the games industry or within software engineering. I'm sure this is relevant to a lot of you. I want to abstract that and turn it into a game idea. I want to abstract this idea of developing new skills, but I want to do it in an interesting way. So the first thing that pops into mind is instead of software developer, you're like a wizard or a warrior or something, and you're developing the skills necessary for whatever, right? There's a couple games that come to mind with that, games that involve schooling, games that are focused on like RPG style things or crafting games. I'm kind of thinking of things like My Time at Portia or maybe Hogwarts Legacy. I haven't played that yet. I know Brad's into it, but that's like a school-based game, right? That might be relevant here. Or I know there's what is it called? There's that Chucklefish game that they're making about like which school, that sort of a thing, right? That's an idea. The other concept would be, okay, so we can just go crafting or we can go some kind of specific discipline. I have this idea in my head for a game about a master lumberjack. You know what? Let's go down that because that is such a weirdly specific niche skill. And I feel like that would be an interesting angle. The game is just about becoming a lumberjack. And I want this to be about, so there's a mini game where you time your chops and have your chops land exactly right. And there's a danger element to it, because if you do it wrong, the tree can fall on you or fall on a house or whatever else, right? So you've got to time it right. You've got to aim it right. And you have to become the greatest of lumberjacks. Maybe there is a mysterious person who helps teach you the skills of a lumberjack. Now, here's where it gets interesting. You can go into different environments for your tree chopping, and you have to be careful which trees you select, and you have to be sensitive to the environment around you. So you have to check and be like, oh, am I going to get attacked by a bear while I'm chopping this tree? Or maybe some mystical creature, right? Mix it up a little bit. You have to avoid certain sacred trees, or if you do get the sacred trees, you can only sell it to certain people, or it curses you, or something like that. There's a specific ritual you have to perform on this tree because it's in this area and it makes it safe to chop, and then now you don't get cursed, right? And then as far as skill development stuff, there, as you're playing the game, you get better and better at refining different portions of the tree and making sure that you're using everything within it. Or you start learning like replanting things so that you don't completely destroy the environment around it and can still live off of it years down the road. And then I do think the game would have to progress over a very long period of time to get this idea across of like, it takes a long time to develop a new skill to a degree of mastery, even something so simple as chopping down trees. And we could make this intentionally very simple. So we could strip away all of the crazy, like, oh, and these are the magical woods, and like this tree is extra big, and like this one you have to do this way. We could strip away all that stuff and just make it a bare bones game about chopping trees, and the more you do it, the better you get at it, right? At this point, it's less of a like super exciting wide appeal game and more of just a project that's kind of a contemplation of skill development. But that's one angle you could take with it if that interests you, right? I think there's potential here. It's maybe not the wildest idea I've ever come up with, but sometimes the simple stuff, like, I'm a big fan of just execution. I've had people say stuff like, oh, that idea seems like it's something you got to be really careful with to make sure it's not cheesy. It's like, man, every idea is cheesy, right? Every idea you say is going to be like, oh, wow, what a original idea. And it's going to be like, oh, that's kind of cheesy, whatever. Dude, it's all about the execution. I can just say, hey, I want to write a book about wizards. People are going, well, it's already been done. Look at Harry Potter. And it's, all right, cool. But I have a different image in my head of what it is, and it's nothing like that. And then you write the book, and it's all about the execution. You write it, you edit it, you edit it, you edit it, you keep going. I mean, it's not about having the perfect idea. It's not about avoiding being cheesy. It's about pulling it off in a way that makes it enjoyable, in my opinion. All right, that's what we got this week. If somebody has any ideas that they want me to riff on, go ahead and shoot them at me in the Discord. It's been a while since we've done that. I would love to riff off of one of your ideas. I think that would bring me a lot of excitement. It can just be something in your life, whatever it is that you want to hear a brainstormed game concept off of. That's all I got for you. Let's send it back to the regular show. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Chris. As always, awesome. Chris's Corner. I love those segments, man. I love
me too. I laughed when he brought up the idea of a tree being like, you know, being in like cognizant of your environment.
Oh, yeah.
And like, you know, it could fall on a house. It could fall on you. And it just reminded me of when we we played Valheim, the first death I ever had was from a tree falling.
Oh, yeah, dude.
And it was only because I wanted to know. I was just curious. I was like, if this tree falls on me, does it damage me? And it straight up killed me. I was like, yeah.
No, my death by tree did not come from curiosity if it would kill me. It was one of the chain reaction tree falling.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Like, now I see, like, if my tree knocks over another tree, like, I just run. I turn around and sprint far away from the area until the mayhem's over, and then I go look at the remains.
I have fun chopping down trees in that game because I try my best to create those chains.
Yeah.
Just because it's so nice when you're just picking up all the wood. It's like, oh, I don't have to, like...
They did such a good job with the way that lumberjacking feels in that game.
Yeah, they really did. But yes, Chris, I really liked this game idea. As a fan of idle games, this was definitely right up my alley in terms of the creative process.
It's actually funny that you chose lumberjacking, because my first time ever, like before I did this podcast, like my first delve into Unity probably 5 or 6 years ago, I did make a little lumberjacking kind, or started making a little lumberjacking game. And here was my idea, and this might actually be a good idea for some of you guys. Kind of touches on the, we've talked about the dream game scenario, the people, dream game syndrome. Mm-hmm. Is it, what would that be, DGS? Nah, we can play with that later. But we've talked about dream game syndrome where, you know, you come up with this, just your perfect game, and you know it might be just way too big for what you're capable of doing, something you'll never finish, or you need hundreds of people working on it to make it the way you want, so on and so forth. I have those games in mind, but kind of what I've thought, and I like how Chris kind of framed it up and teed this up for me here. What I like is taking a mechanic out of that game, just one single mechanic, and making a game out of that portion of it. And then if you do decide to, you know, move on to make your dream game, like you've already made that little mechanic, and you know, maybe the next game you do is another little mechanic. So like, for example, my dream game has crafting in it, and I want crafting to be a really big part of the game as a whole. Mm-hmm. So just making a really simple like game where the whole idea of the game loop was going to be dude goes and talks to the dude that collects the trees, the cut down trees. He puts an order in. Guy walks out to the forest where there's a bunch of trees, chops them down, and brings them back to the guy that asked for the trees. Like, that was going to be it. Yeah. But in that, I would have learned a ton, right? Like, you know, how an inventory works, like when he chops it. If you look at how, like, the feedback that you get, not just the, like, if you're using a controller, like the actual haptic feedback, but like just on the screen, there's a subtle shake to the screen. Mm-hmm. Chopping wood in Valheim, it just feels so good. You know, just learning how to do all of that, the explosion of pixels of you know, wood chips when you hit the wood and stuff, the sound it makes, like all of that stuff is really, really cool. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I love the idea of kind of taking a little aspect of a bigger game that you have an idea of, and making that a game in and of itself.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like how he also brought up like the bare bones version of it. You know, mm-hmm. you just create a game where you're chopping a tree and you gain skill. And like, we strip away all of the fun stuff, like the magical trees and whatnot, and the different types of trees. You're just chopping a tree, and over time you get better at it.
Yeah.
You know, that's another aspect that I like. He brought it back because like that is, if you strip everything away, that is effectively what we are creating.
Yeah.
You know, and that is a great way to look at your games, you know. Don't look at the flashiness of them. This is why I personally am not sold by a game looking good. I will look at a game and go, if I strip all of this away, all of this beautiful graphics, all this awesome environment, if I strip that away, what is the actual game about? You know, and is it fun? And a lot of games that look pretty, you'll find that the gameplay itself is usually not.
Yeah, right.
So...
yeah, we've all been burned by that, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not one who generally cares about a game looking good. I look at a game and I try to strip away what I see and go, what does it offer me in terms of gameplay?
Right.
And that's what I like, how Chris brought that up. That was really cool.
He also brought up an oft topic that I bring up, which is, don't worry about how original your idea is at first. And yes. He picked like the best example. Like, I want to write a book about wizards. So that shit's been done. Of course it has. Like,
yeah, this... we both chuckled at that one.
Yeah. Like, and my story right now, there are so many elements of different books that I'm kind of thinking of, because they inspired me. Those books inspired me to want to tell the story that I'm telling. It's different enough. and it will probably end up being significantly more different when once it's done. But it's gotten me to the point that it's got me writing. And, you know, I have no illusions that what I'm the words I'm putting on the page right now are going to end up in the final story if I ever finish it. You know, it's most likely going to be, this is a horrible first draft, and then I'm going to take out huge chunks, rewrite sections, you know, and then eventually make it my own. But yeah, like, if you think that you don't want to do something because it's already been made, I mean, think about the shooter genre. I think I brought this up, exact point up before on this show.
Yep.
Like, I think I've seen major shooters release, like, within weeks of each other, like kind of a Call of Duty and a Modern Warfare and, you know, like Overwatch type thing. Like they, yeah. I've seen them released very close to each other. It's not a zero sum game. Like
no.
The people there's plenty of money and players out there for a very similar game to exist, and they can both still make money.
Yeah. And even going into shooters, I mean, like Call of Duty, Overwatch, Halo, and Bulletstorm. I'm going to bring up those three games, or four games, all of them shooters, all of them playing totally different from one another.
Yes.
They're completely different games. There's very little similarities between any of those games, other than the fact that they're a first-person shooter, which right. I just dug from the depths with Bulletstorm, because that is an older game.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was one of the first shooters I remember playing as a kid going, wow, this is really fun. Cause I hated Call of Duty. Like I've kind of always hated it, to be totally honest. The only time I ever enjoyed it was when I played it with Norb and we were playing Warzone. But then even that like wore off after about a week or two of playing. And then I was like, meh.
Yeah.
Got my fun out of it.
Yeah, you guys were in that. I almost jumped on that with you.
Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't.
At least Warzone was free. Like, the actual Battle Royale mode is free. But yeah, that was a very short-lived thing for me, which I knew it would be, because even when I was in the military, Call of Duty was the big thing, so I played it just because a lot of my buddies played it. And yeah, I don't know. Call of Duty, I can handle it in short bursts, man. But after about 2 or 3 weeks of playing it, I'm like, I want nothing to do with this game.
Right.
But yeah.
So I put a note in our show notes section to get your suggestions in for Chris for his next Chris's Corner. Just put those in our general tab.
Chris, I have a suggestion for you.
Oh, here we go.
I have one. So, Chris, when you listen to this, here's your suggestion. My two sons are toddlers. I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. And these little bastards don't listen for shit. I love my boys to death. But boy, oh boy, would I love to see what your brain comes up with when it comes to something where you have this entity that will not listen to you, but the goal of the game is to get it to do what you need it to do. I would love to hear your thoughts on that, Chris. That's where that stems from, is my children just not listening for a goddamn thing. They listen to me a lot more than my wife, but they still have their moments, man, where it's just like, Jesus.
Man, I almost want to like steal Chris's thunder and run with this game idea, but like I want to let Chris have. I first thing that popped in my head was a dad buff, because the dad buff when it comes to commanding the children is way stronger than the mom. Has her own superpowers and her own buffs far beyond what dad has.
Yes,
but when it comes to snapping bitches in order, dad rules the roost.
Yeah, I love it when, like, you know, I'm outside or something, and it could just be for 30 seconds, you know, and my wife's telling the kids to do something and they're giving her a hard time, and I walk through the door and she's like, I'll tell daddy, and they're like, no.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh man. But yeah, that's my suggestion, Chris, for Chris's Corner.
That's awesome. All right, well, let's roll into what we've been up to in the game world. And, you know, normally it's been 2 weeks. This time it's been 2 months. So, because I've already posted it. The latest book that I've been on, and this was off of a website suggestion, audiobook, has been, it's called Dungeon Crawler Carl. And So there's a genre of book called lit RPGs, and I'm not sure if I've talked about those.
I've heard of them. I've also heard of this book. This came up on my Audible recommendations as well. Oh, yeah. I completely looked over it. Like, I don't know why, but maybe I should give it a listen. I don't know. I've heard of lit RPGs before. I've never actually read one or listened to one, to be totally honest. So,
well, Ready Player One is essentially a lit RPG. It's a really...
Well, then I guess I've listened to at least one.
Yeah. The other ones, I will say this, like, Ready Player One is among, if not my absolute favorite book of all time.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely in my top five for me.
Yeah, it's definitely up there. And I have not listened to another lit RPG that's anywhere near what Ready Player One is, but they're entertaining. I love the idea. Like, I love where the people get stuck in the game. I kind of have a love-hate relationship with the actual gamification. It depends on how it's done in the particular book.
I like
some of the ideas of the min-maxing of some really powerful characters. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they get a little too into that part of it, where they're like 20 minutes rattling off stats and you're like keeping track and you're like, oh, what was his intelligence 20 minutes ago? Was it 19? Like, who gives a shit?
You know what? I've done lit RPGs, but I'll get to that in a second. Continue.
Yeah, but generally, like, most of them I listen to, and I can talk at more length about some of the ones I like, and I'll probably say this for next show.
Yeah.
Because we've been going pretty long. But this one, I'm only about, I don't know, probably 2 hours, 2.5 hours in a 13-hour book.
Okay.
It has a very interesting premise at the beginning. One of the best things about it, though, which I thought I was about to hate, the dude that narrates it sounds exactly like Patrick Warburton. Not exactly, but he sounds a lot like Patrick Warburton. And at first I was like, oh, this is just a dude that's trying to sound like Joe from Family Guy. Like, I'm gonna hate this. Like, but very quickly, it grew on me, and I love it now. Like, it's hilarious.
That's awesome.
And the whole, I'll give you a, actually, you know what? Is there like a? I don't want to give any spoilers away, but I'm at the point now that I will safely recommend this one, because it's just, and get the audiobook. Yeah. It's hilarious. Okay. Publisher summary. Let me see. Okay. Yeah. So, a man, his ex-girlfriend's cat, a sadistic game show unlike anything in the universe, a dungeon crawl where survival depends on killing your prey in the most entertaining way possible. In a flash, every human erected construction on Earth, from Buckingham Palace to the tiniest of sheds, collapsing into a heap, sinking into the ground. There's quite a bit here, but that should be enough to wet your whistle.
Yeah.
Like, it's really, really interesting. And the girlfriend's cat, there's a dynamic between Carl and the cat, which is great. I will give you this, 'cause it's early enough. So the cat comes in to the dungeon with him, and through a series of events, he gets some very strong, probably I would say at this point, overpowered treats for the cat that buff the cat permanently.
Yeah.
And basically change it from being classified as a pet in the dungeon/game that they're in to being classified as a dungeon crawler itself. That can talk, and it has this hoity-toity English like princess accent, and it's at the point that they're at in the game right now, significantly stronger than Carl.
Nice.
Like, across the board. It shoots magic missiles out of its eyes. It's fucking badass, dude.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so do yourself a favor and read that one. It's fun. It looks like, I just noticed here, there's at least two other books in this series, so...
Oh, nice.
Or maybe at least one other in the series, and then the author has written another book.
Okay.
So yeah, that's a good one.
So I want to say we've all potentially engaged with lit RPGs, but in a different medium. And I'm going to go with television and movies, with Sword Art Online.
Yes.
And Death Race. And Gamer. All three of those are, in a way, lit RPGs.
The second two, what are those?
Death Race is with Jason Statham, and Gamer is with Gerard Butler.
Yeah.
Yeah, those three, Sword Art Online, Gamer, and Death Race, all three of those came to mind as you started telling me what a lit RPG is. I'm like, oh, shit. I guess I technically have engaged with this a lot more than I thought, just in a different medium, not necessarily through a book. So yeah, that's cool. That might actually be something. You know what? I'm probably going to go on Audible and check that one out.
Yeah. Let me give you, so those of you who aren't familiar with lit RPG or what it is we're talking about here, let me just give you the definition. So LIP RPG stands for Literary Role-Playing Game, and it's an emerging genre of fiction that combines the experience of digital role-playing games with traditional narrative plot lines. It weaves a story around a protagonist that consciously immerses themselves in a virtual world to follow the quests and challenges set by the game realm. It's not to be confused with choose-your-own-adventure storylines or novels that expand the lore of existing RPG games. Instead, imagine you are the spectator to someone playing as their World of Warcraft avatar, witnessing their progression through in-game campaigns while observing their development through visible statistics such as health, agility, strength, or intelligence. So that is what a lit RPG is. You're essentially, I like that last part. You're watching someone playing a game.
Yeah, that pretty much fits Sword Art Online.
Yeah.
And Gamer almost perfectly. Yep. So, yeah.
Yeah, and there's, you know, there's some leeway to be made in that. And there's some more creative ways. Like I said, I don't love when they get really deep into the statistics. Mm-hmm. There is one that I do enjoy. It's called The Ritualist. I want to say Dakota Kraut writes them. I'll link this too. Let me check real quick.
Yeah. I only like it when they go in the stats. Like when I watch Sword Art Online, I really like that. That I could follow that for some reason. You know, they talk a lot about stats in it, but none of it ever felt jarring in like, oh, I can't remember, and it felt relevant, I guess. That's probably why I was able to digest it so well. It is your standard anime, though. So you have these long bits of just like, here's a backstory for five episodes, you know? And it's right, like, damn it, bro. Just get to the thing. So, you know, it is an anime at the end of the day, okay? So, like, just keep that in mind. But it is a really good one. It's definitely up there in one of my top favorites, which I don't have a lot of those considering how much anime I have put into my brain. But yeah, Sword Art Online, definitely up there in one of my favorite animes of all time.
Yeah, I've never read, it was probably manga for Sword Art Online. I have watched the anime and I love it. It's really,
The anime was my only introduction to the entire like world of SAO. So
yeah. I just linked another one in the show notes to the one I was talking about called The Ritualist. The series is called The Completionist Chronicles, and it's so far for the first, this is another guy that pumps out books, by the way, Dakota Kraut. In the first few books, I absolutely loved the character. And he, like, I'm a big fan of OP characters, and this dude doesn't disappoint the way he that works inside the game world. It gives you a lot of the different stats and stuff, but I like how they do it in this book. I don't always like how they do it. And I think next time I'll have a more exhaustive list of like some of the lit RPGs that I'll share. But these, the one is the one I'm reading now, Dungeon Crawler Carl. And then The Ritualist is probably, I would say, my favorite one that I've looked forward to when they come out with new ones. I will say, though, that the latest book, I'm having a really hard time getting through. Mm-hmm. It deals with like dwarves.
Okay.
And on this other place he goes. And for some reason, whether it was written that way or just the voice actor that's reading the book decided to do this, but he's doing this whole like California bro surfer dude kind of accent for the dwarves, and it kills me when it's so cringy.
I hate when they do that, and sometimes you wonder like, was this a direction that they wanted, or is this giving too much creative freedom to the narrator? Like what was the choice? Because there's a book that I love from the Warhammer 40K series of books. It's called Hell's Reach. It's about my mm-hmm. favorite Space Marine chapter, the Black Templars.
Yep.
And it's about Grimaldis specifically, who's a chaplain for them. One of my favorite characters, High Marshal Helbrecht, is in the book, which is the leader of the Black Templars. And the first time I ever heard this book on audiobook, I've read this book probably 6-7 times my whole life. I listened to it in audiobook format once. I didn't make it past the first time Helbrecht was introduced.
Oh, man.
Because this dude, if you look at his model, he looks badass as fuck, dude. And you're like, yeah, this dude will crush your skull with his finger. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, in my mind, I have this like headcanon of how he would sound if he spoke.
Yeah.
And the way the narrator presents him, he talks like this. And I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, this dude leads the entire Black Templar cult, as I'm going to call it. This man is a warrior leader who fears no Xenos, who wants to purge the heretic probably more than any other space marine on the face of the earth or in the galaxy. Like, what the fuck is this? You know, like, dude, I got so upset. I had to pause it, and I just sat in silence for about 2 minutes before I said, no, I'm not reading the rest of this book. Even though he's only really in the beginning and the end, it's like, no, that is not how Helbrecht would sound. There's no effing way. He'd be like this, I imagine this deep, like, booming voice, right? That's just like King Leonidas from 300, right? Like, that Gerard Butler, like, you know, and I'm like, this is not it. He sounds like a decrepit old man who's about to keel over and die from a heart attack. Like, it's so terrible to say, but you know, like, it is. It took me completely out of the book. It took me out of it 100% because Grimaldis sounds like a space marine. Any other space marine whose voice, they sound very space marine-y, and then you get to Helbrecht and you're like, God, you sound like you're about to like fall apart.
Yeah, there's certain audiobooks that I generally just want you to read it. I don't want you to try to do the voice or anything. Like, I will come up with the voice myself. Right. However, I usually don't like if you try to put in the sound effects and shit. Like, mm-hmm. The first time I heard that, I'd have to look at which one it is, but one of the lit RPGs I was listening to, I think it might have been The Land. I'll talk about more next week, but the first time I listened to it, it had like a level up dinging noise and all the, you know, like coins dropping in your purse and stuff. I'm like, dude, this just stop. Like,
yeah. You know who does sound effects and music really well with their audiobooks? Star Wars.
Yeah.
All of the Star Wars audiobooks, they do a phenomenal job with the music, the sound effects. They're not distracting. They get you like really roped in. And there's two narrators, which if I ever see them on a book I'm interested in, I would gladly read or listen to their book. Audible is bugging on me right now. When I click the title of a book I'm listening to, it takes me to one that my wife has on here for some reason. Jonathan Davis is the name of the one guy, and I forget the name of the other guy.
I can probably link it. What's the name of the book? I'll put
the name of the book is The Martyr by Anthony Ryan. And the guy who does the narration for that, I could listen to him and Jonathan Davis, either one of those two guys, I could listen to them read any audiobook to me because they do not go over the top with the voices. They stay within their like range, their vocal range. They just tweak it a little bit so you can tell who's talking, and that's it. Like that's what they do. And I love that, dude. It's just so nice to listen to.
That's usually how I prefer it. You know, give me a little inflection and stuff like that. One of the guys that does it really well is Michael. Oh, he reads the Eye of the World books.
Okay.
Or the Wheel of Time series by Robert Jordan. Mm-hmm. Michael Kramer. He's got a wonderful fantasy voice. He changes it just enough to know who it is. What kills me about that, though, is Kate Redding. If the way they do all of those books, and even a lot of Brandon Sanderson's books, he uses the same two narrator team here. Mm-hmm. And I read most of Brandon's books like on paper.
Yeah.
If it's a female heavy chapter or section that they're reading, then Kate Redding will take over. If it's male dominated, then Michael Kramer will be reading. Mm-hmm. Kate Redding's voice puts me to sleep. It's not even that it puts me to sleep. It's just, my ears don't register it.
Yeah.
Like I can't pay attention. I find myself, daydreaming when she's narrating.
Yeah.
And then it's like one of those moments, because usually I'm listening while I'm driving. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where I'll be like driving for 10 minutes and realize I haven't listened to a damn word of the story. And I'm like, God damn it, Kate, you did it again.
Yeah, I will warn you, the guy who reads The Martyr, that narrator, he's a phenomenal narrator. But do not listen to that man if you are unable to focus on his voice, only because he will soothe you to sleep. I cannot listen to him before bed, dude, because I will pass the fuck out like immediately, and that book will just be running in my ears and I will not register any of it.
Yep.
But he's such a good narrator. Like he has that, I don't know, he's like a traditional narrator sound. And then the only other book I could ever think of where they didn't do like just a single narrator, but the way they did it was phenomenal, is in Dooku Jedi Lost. The audiobook for that, they actually got all of the voice actors for all of the characters from the cartoons of the Star Wars show and said, hey, we want you guys to come in and play your character on this audiobook. And that's what they do.
That's cool.
Awesome. So like if the character is acting or talking, they're the one narrating their action as well as their words in character. And it's like so easy to follow. And, you know, if you've ever watched the Clone Wars TV show with Star Wars, you'll be like, yeah, that's totally Asajj Ventress. That's the voice actress for her, because that's who it actually is. The guy who voices Dooku, he plays Dooku. It's really cool.
Yeah. So the last one I'll bring up is the furthest other way you could go with production level, which is The Sandman by Neil Gaiman. Gaiman, however you say his name.
Yeah.
Really great author. I like him a lot. That was the, it's, I don't know how to describe the book except to say that it was like listening to a comic book being read to you.
Oh, nice.
It has background noises going on the whole time, ambient. Like if they're in a restaurant, you can hear like the plates clinking around and people talking in the background. And like it normally, like from what I just said, would be something that really took me out of it. And it did take me a second to kind of let it take me. But yeah. Dude, once I kind of was like, yeah, this is fine. holy shit, is that an experience, man. Like, you should listen to that book. It's just, it's nothing like I've ever experienced. And the cast that does the audiobook is out of this fucking world.
Nice.
Awesome. First of all, Neil Gaiman is one of the narrators. The main narrator that does the voice of the Sandman is James McAvoy.
Oh, wow.
Bill Nighy's in here. Kristen Schaal, who does like every cartoon voice. Like, she does the girl with the bunny ears on Bob's Burgers, whatever her name is. And you've heard her voice.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
Brian Cox. You know what? I'm going to send a picture of, because you know, all of these people, and they're awesome. So I'll put that in the show notes under, it's just a picture of the cast.
Oh, and, nice. Oh yeah. That's amazing. Oh, Andy Serkis, dude. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. That dude's in everything.
Michael Sheen in everything
when I don't even know he's in it. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah. B.B. Newworth, I saw on Broadway when I was in high school in Chicago. She played Frasier's wife on Cheers and on Frasier. So there's just some powerhouse actors.
Yeah.
It's nuts. You should probably. That's just a fun experience. So,
yeah.
That's the last bit of entertainment I have. Anything else you wanted to chat about?
All I got is just Baldur's Gate 3 comes out, I believe, this Thursday. Let me double check my calendar. Yep, this Thursday, the 3rd. I'm telling you, if you are a tabletop Dungeons & Dragons fan, you will love this game. If you are a fan of CRPGs in general, you will love this game. You don't have to know anything about D&D 5th edition. Larian has developed the entire game as a homebrew campaign. So they've even tweaked some of the rules for the classes to make them better fit a digital format. They've even looked at things like Ranger and tweaked them. They looked at Monk and tweaked them. Instead of them having only one viable subclass to play that's fun, they've now tweaked them to where they can all kind of be fun in their own way, in Larian's way. And I will also do a quick little primer. The game only goes up to about level 12 as the max level. They did this by design, but given the amount of stuff you can do, that makes sense. And I imagine expansion content will carry it over into level 20 and whatnot. And so,
what's it called again?
Baldur's Gate 3. Yeah, and I highly recommend this game. I know a lot of you out there are RPG gamers. I'm telling you, you'll love it. You can be a barbarian, rage, and one of the guy who's like the lead developer on this project, if you go look up how he talks about each class or each race, he talks about how throwable they are. So if you want to play a barbarian and rage, pick up your teammates and throw them, or pick up enemies and throw them, by all means, man, that's a way you can play. There's all kinds of fun stuff, man. Larian really knows how to make a game and allow creativity in gameplay for you to play characters in interesting ways. So
that sounds really cool.
Yeah, that's literally the only thing I want to talk about. I've had the game in early access, and the early access build is available, but it's the early access build. Monk isn't even technically in the early access, so you can't even play that if you wanted to play a monk. But I'm probably going to play a fighter or a monk as my first character. I don't know. I haven't touched it for a year now, so it's a totally different game from when I played it the first time. But it's official release. This
collector's edition box looks awesome. Did you see this?
I did, yeah. Yeah, I just stuck with the early access since I already I've had this for almost over a year. I know that. I've been waiting for this game, dude, for a while.
How much is, hold on, is it only PS5 that you can get the, hold on, let me see. Pre-order the collector's edition. This thing comes with, it is PS5. Ew. God, I hate this. But yeah, dude, it looks so cool. PC or PS5.
Yeah.
Like,
And it's a very chill game in terms of playing. Like, you don't need to memorize hotkeys. You can play this entirely with a mouse or play it on a console if you want. But it's a very, again, you don't need to know anything about D&D to get into it. I think they did a really cool thing. There's also an origin character called the Dark Urge. This was a character they gave us because they hit their stretch goals. And I'm so happy they gave it to us because it is the Murder Hobo character.
Murder Hobo.
Yeah, your entire backstory is the only origin character that you can customize. So you can build a custom character, pick an origin character, and that's your two choices of how to play. If you pick an origin character, they're a pre-built character with an entire backstory, and it actually changes how the world interacts with you because you're like this set character in the world. And it's up to you if you want to play them true to their alignment or not. That's the other cool thing. But the Dark Urge is an origin character who you can customize, and your entire backstory is you kind of just woke up in this trail of blood and you don't really know what happened. And you get these weird thoughts, that intrusive thoughts that happen, and you can choose to go with the intrusive thought or not go with the intrusive thought. And that's like your character. And some of these intrusive thoughts are kind of effed up. Like, they're not going to be safe for YouTube. I'm just going to say that right now.
That's awesome.
But dude, I'm so glad they put this character in because it'd be a fun way to play the game, even if it's just one playthrough. And that's the only playthrough you do. I would recommend Dark Urge because you can still play the race and class you want. But you also have this little voice in your head that's constantly telling you, like, kick them off the cliff. Do the thing. Be really evil. Pull their arm out of the portal and have it get chopped off. Like, and your character will react and go, I don't know what happened. It's a really cool twist on a character that I've never really seen in any game like this. So
that is cool. Mm-hmm. I did just see on here that not only is the collector's edition only available for PC or PS5, but the game itself is not available on Xbox. It's a PlayStation exclusive along with PC.
Oh, wow.
Which, Jesus.
Yeah.
That sucks.
That does suck. I really will say that sucks because, dude, I'm telling you, this is going to be one. A lot of people are thinking this is going to be game of the year.
Yeah, somehow has escaped my radar.
Well, you know, and the reason for that is probably because it was in early access for, I think, almost 2 or 3 years. The game has been in development for 6 or 7 years. And Larian is a studio that I respect a lot just because Divinity Original Sin 1 and 2 are amazing games. And if you've played either of those and loved them, you're definitely going to love this game, 100%.
Yeah, and I loved all those before.
Yeah, and I think it's been like 20 years since we've had a Baldur's Gate game. So,
okay.
In the mainline series, I should say.
So some quick searching here about the Xbox situation. Uh-huh. I was thinking it was probably like Sony trying to get more exclusives. I don't think that's the case. Okay. They said they ran into some technical issues in developing the Xbox port that have stopped us feeling 100% confident in announcing it until we're certain we've found the right solutions. So they are developing it for Xbox, but it does not appear that they have a release date for it, but they're not going to hold up the release of the other platforms in the meantime.
Okay.
So
I was going to say, it doesn't sound right to me that they would just do a PS5 exclusive, but still allow it on PC.
So yeah. Well, I mean, it could happen. They like could. Spider-Man, they did that with.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yep, you're right. That's weird. But yeah, no, that makes more sense. As I say, Larian's never really been more an exclusive type. If anything, they've always developed for, like, PC first.
Yeah. Well, it might have been, like, you know, Wizards of the Coast might have struck a deal.
Yeah.
But Magic is across platforms. Well, they seem to have circled their wagons around Arena, Magic the Gathering Arena.
Which I will say is a good game.
It's pretty good. I think until they have the Commander format in its full glory, it's not going to catch its stride.
Yeah. You got to have those casual formats for your online multiplayer games.
Yeah.
You need them.
Ever since I've learned how to play Commander, there is no form of Magic the Gathering that exists beyond that now. Like, I love Commander. It's so much better than anything else.
That's awesome. But yeah,
all man, right,
that's all I got. Baldur's Gate 3. I will sell this game. Someone could say Baldur's Gate 3 is a bad game, or else you get a bullet to the face. I'd be like, shoot me now.
You take that bullet, huh?
Jeez. Yeah, dude.
That's a strong ass statement.
Oh, dude, Baldur's Gate is I just love it when a good D&D game comes out, man. I really do. I love it too. You know, the last good one I played was Neverwinter Nights Diamond, and that was a long ass fucking time ago. So,
yeah, I was playing through that Pathfinder Kingmaker game that I made a comment. It was on sale. It might still be on sale on Xbox if you check. It was down to $8.
Ooh, that's worth it. 100%. That's way worth it.
Hell yeah. It's a $30 game, I think, normally. $30 or $40.
Something like that.
Let me see if it's still... Pathfinder Kingmaker is what it's called. Mm-hmm. And I did see the reviews were, like, kicking the shit out of it on the Series S for, like... having a bunch of bugs and unplayable, and it would crash and you lose your game save and all this stuff. I haven't played it a ton, but I've had absolutely no issue with it at all. So maybe do your homework on that part if you're planning on getting it with Xbox. You have one day left, so you probably won't hear this recording by the time.
So that's okay. You could, it's still worth it.
You could have saved $30. You know what? I'll do this for you. I'll post it in our show notes. So if you happen to already be in our Discord, I can at least say I tried to notify you. Yeah. In fact, I did say that it was on sale for something stupid.
I was going to say, we definitely have talked about it before. And, you know, it is one of those games that does go on sale frequently these days. So, you know, if you missed it this time, just wait for the next, like, big... seasonal sale, and you'll.
I actually have not seen it. I've had it on my wish list for quite some time on Xbox, and that's how I found out about it, is they notified me. So I don't think that one has been on sale.
I only know what I see on Steam because I don't really have an Xbox these days. I only have a PS5 and an Xbox or a PC, and I just mostly pay attention to sales on Steam and GOG. I really don't pay attention to anything else. My PlayStation Plus subscription gives me all the games I want for free. So,
sweet.
Yeah, that's really all I use my PlayStation for.
All right, well, let's bring this baby in for a close.
All right.
First show in 2 months. We're happy to be back. We hope to get more of a normal rhythm going. I think we will. I think I feel more comfortable coming on, not talking about game stuff. That being said... we will try to get more game development stuff in.
Yeah. I know I'll have some stuff to talk about as I, you know, progress through my journey as well. You know,
yeah.
I'll only share though when I have like big breakthroughs. I'm not going to share every little detail like I have in the past.
Yeah. But before we sign off, I wanted to give love to our community here. So one phenomenal thing, I know one of the first kind of milestones I was aiming at for our show was to get consistently at 100 downloads a month. Mm-hmm. I think where we can start like actually talking about getting sponsors is 1,000 downloads a month. Again, we've done no advertising. We've done nothing to try to like get listeners. So this is 100% organic and you guys just finding the show, which I think is really cool. But we haven't put out a show in 2 months, and we've maintained in the last 30 days an average of 123 downloads. So that's huge. Oh,
let's go.
Yeah, thank you guys for that. We hit 2,000. I think I mentioned it at some point. Since the last show, I think we hit 2,000. We're already at 2,500.
Wow.
So, like, well, 2,432. So, like... and I'm looking at like the overview, like this is something to keep in mind. Our number one downloaded show is obviously the very first one of the To Be Determined shows. So episode zero. Following that, the most listened to show is the one we did about Unity, the one that's called Uniting with Unity. Mm-hmm. So I think having some stuff that's more specific to like Unity, or maybe if one of these days I want to open up, I know Godot's another one. What's the other big one I'm not thinking of right now?
Unreal Engine.
Unreal. Yeah. Like just kind of doing a showcase on those, I think is obviously what some of the greater community out there is looking for, because that's our second most popular show.
Yeah.
But man, and since I've talked to somebody, just downloaded another one. So we're at 124 downloads this month. Yeah. Thank you. Whoever Thanks downloaded peeps. Our show at 10:15 PM, Eastern time on July 30th. You just made our night. All right. And lastly, I just wanted to, over our last five episodes, maybe see if I can find some new locations here. This is one of my favorite things. Sandy, Utah looks new.
That does sound new.
Sandy, Utah. We got, I think I've said this one actually. Burger Hut, Antwerp province. It looks like Burger Hut. I want to say Burger Hut.
All right, that one does not sound familiar. I was going to say, I feel like we would have made that joke for sure.
Yeah, Burger Hut, Antwerp province. That's fun. That's just fun to say. Any of these other ones? I haven't looked at this list yet. Usually I kind of try to pick some out. Avere, Brussels capital. That looks new. Layton, Utah.
Yeah, I think that's new.
Yellowknife, Northwest Territories. That looks like a new. Oh yeah, there's a whole bunch down here. Tifugs. Tiffauges. Tifauges.
Vendi. I don't know that one.
Is the country is Vendi, maybe? I don't know what that is, but thank you. Two downloads from there, so somebody found us there. I'll pick two more. We got Lucane Vaud. My best friend's last name is Lucane. It's probably not how you pronounce it, actually, but it's close. Lusani, Lausanne. I don't know, but thank you. And last one, who gets it? Ipswich, Suffolk. How about that? That's a great one. Yeah. Ipswich Manor, by the way, I think from the Casper movie, right? Is that where that's from? Now I'm going to check this before we go. Ipswich Manor.
Whipstaff.
Right?
Yeah.
That sounds way... What is Ipswich? That's from something.
That's...
Somebody tell me what Ipswich is from. It's some witch... Is it the Halloween movie Hocus Pocus?
Oh.
Let's see. Film event, Ipswich, United Kingdom, blah, 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 Hocus Pocus. What town? Salem, Massachusetts. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah,
I might be out of my mind.
Could be.
What is it? What
it's late for me, man. I get up at between 4:45 and 5:30 every day. So
the name like Stanley Ipswich is stuck in my head, and this might just be the sunburn talking. But if that rings any bells for any of you, and you can like let me know what that is, let me know. Otherwise, that's it for us tonight. Or today, or whatever time of day you're listening to this. But glad to be back. Hope to be back sooner than 2 months for our next show.
For sure.
And thank you guys so much, guys and gals. We will see you next time.
All right. See ya.